ABC AFL Daily is the best conversation in footy. Hosted by Corbin Middlemass and Ben Cameron, alongside regulars like Mick Malthouse.
I mean, I don't remember too many games, but it's one of the ones I remembered. It was just that physical.
Bob Murphy.
Where do you guys get off thinking you can pick and choose?
And more. It keeps you in the loop with the biggest stories in the AFL and the number one analysis in the game. ABC AFL Daily. 5 apps a week on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What I will say is that every player is important. No one is entitled to the shirt, and each game is different. And different circumstances and different situations for each game at a different time. And for this game, this is a team I believe needed to play. That's it, and I'll always back my decision.
Socceroos manager Tony Popovich, in the wake of the draw with Paraguay that sent Australia into the next round of the World Cup. That audio was in response to a question about the team he picked for the final group game. Sounds fiery, doesn't he? Well, as the Socceroos rest their weary legs and marinate in the success of their tournament progression, we're doing three things. Revisiting the muted euphoria and lessons from Paraguay, understanding what's frustrated the coach, and casting ahead to a do-or-die clash. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. Daniel Garb covers football for the ABC. He's in San Francisco as part of the Green and Gold Army. What a time to be there, Garby. Thanks so much for joining us. I don't know that we got the iconic moment we craved, but we certainly got the point we needed. Give me a sense of the Australian energy at the ground against Paraguay.
It was fascinating to watch because, yeah, there wasn't the euphoria of a Croatia 2006 or Denmark 22 where you get the results in that last group stage game to get through. Yet, walking out of the stadium where, you know, a lot of people around you were like, nah, it was a ho-hum affair, great to get through. You clap the boys, amazed at the achievement to finish second in the group again for the third time in a World Cup and second World Cup in a row. But then you come down and you just see and hear the Aussie fans dancing and celebrating as loudly as any fan group would at this World Cup. And then you're just swept up in it all. And it's just incredible to watch Levi Stadium just shaking to the sounds of Aussie tunes and Aussies taking it over. Everyone here understood the enormity of it. Well, it wasn't the most enthralling game. Australia controlled it and got the job done and came to this World Cup. You have to take a step back and realise that we finished second in a group that we knew was tricky. The Americans calling us a layup, and yet here we are. I'm in that spot again and with a big break now until the round of 32 and a chance to win a knockout stage game at a World Cup for the first time. So some individual performances got people buzzing. The game on the whole, not a great one, but Australia controlled it. That was really pleasing against a South American side that was happy to waste time and finish third to Australia in the group.
Which were the individual performances that you and the other fans were just drawn to at the stadium in the moment?
First up was Lucas Harrington. I mean, 18 years of age, youngest ever starter for Australia at a World Cup.
Yeah, I can't really describe it. You know, it means everything to me to represent the Socceroos at a World Cup. You know, I've been dreaming of it since I was a kid, and to be able to do that today is so special, and I can't wait for the knockouts.
I remember watching him for the Brisbane Roar when he kind of burst onto the scene and was captivated then by what he could become. And then we've heard all the reports of him at the MLS and what he's doing over there in America. You know, Tony Popovich is in awe of him.
He is a special talent, and I think I've spoken highly enough about him previously, and it's why he's selected in the squad.
He was earmarked to play a big role within 5 minutes. He just stood out, as we thought it might, that the World Cup is certainly not a level above him, and he is set for the absolute top level of the game. It's already been linked to Barcelona and Liverpool, and I think it's fair to say he'll land up at a club like that at some stage in his career. He's got that much talent. So he was fantastic to watch, particularly early in that game. And then Geordie Boss just takes over in the second half, and he has the Geordie Boss game that we've been waiting for at this World Cup.
It's tight here for Boss, but he's got the skill to get out of it. Wriggles through two challenges. Geordie Boss! Oh, fizzes just right at the back upright.
Well, he played really well against Turkey without doing the things that we hoped he might at this tournament. Got us out of trouble a lot. You know, it was underwhelming against the USA. Didn't have a great game, as several of the team failed to do. But this was his time to take charge on his non-preferred side, playing on the right-hand side and just beating three and four opponents and doubling up on him, and he's getting past him. And it was great to watch. And you know, I've said it for a while, he's Australia's Gareth Bale. I think he is a prototype English Premier League footballer. I think he can play in that league without a worry. And I think he would have caught the attention of many people around world football tonight with his performance. So, yeah, he's finally had that game. And they were the two big talking points for Socceroos fans here in San Francisco.
Tony Popovich, he had us all buzzing when he made six changes to the starting lineup for this clash. And ultimately, you've got to be credit to him because he got the point that he needed. If you had to be critical looking at the way the team gelled or didn't, were there things that you would potentially change?
Nestor Iron Kundera, I don't think, is a pure striker. I'm assuming there was an issue or some caution around Mo Touré. Didn't want to start him, and then he doesn't come on at all. So Iron Kundera's asked to play as the number nine, and that's not really his role.
He's a different type of nine, and we just felt today that he could offer something, which he did.
He's better playing in a wide position where he's got a bit more space and he can run in behind. You know, worked hard, did his job, mature performance, but failed to light the game up. But I'm not sure there's another option outside of Touré that you're really confident in terms of, you know, being the chief striker for Australia. Aziz Bajic gets the nod with Italiano going out and Boss moves to the right, but, you know, failed to penetrate on that side, plays it safe, but very reliable, defensively very strong. That's an interesting one. If Italiano doesn't recover for Belgium, I imagine it stays the same, but you do struggle to get any sort of attacking guile from Aziz Bajic down the left. So outside of that, I think it was fine. I like Jackson Irvine's game. So he comes in for his first start. I thought he was brilliant in midfield.
So it was nice to see Jackson today because that's the Jackson that I remember. And him and both he and Aidan were outstanding.
Alongside Aidan O'Neill, who I think has been the unsung hero of Australia's World Cup campaign. I think he's had a fantastic tournament, Aidan O'Neill, in all three games. And Australia controlled the midfield tonight against Paraguay, which they haven't done so far in this tournament. They were able to get on the front foot, and the performances of Irvine and O'Neill were a big reason for that.
Gubby, I was really fascinated to see Tony Popovich when asked about selection and I guess the way that he set up his team for this, you know, a real bristling and a refusal to be sort of drawn into that conversation.
All 26 players are here to play a role. It's not 11 players only, because before the first game, you would have told me you were surprised with the selection. And if we didn't get the result, you'd be the first one saying, why did I select them? Then we leave a couple out the second game. Then you ask, why are those two not selected? And now we make six changes. And now you ask me again, why are those six in and the other ones out? That will continue because that's the analysis that we have back home.
Spoke to the fact that, you know, he is the one who's going to be answerable for his choices, which is completely fair. But it did surprise me. And then to hear Aidan Hrustic in the mix zone also say that, look, hey, we trust the manager. He goes with his gut.
Look, our boss knows what he's doing. We all have trust in him. And I don't think he's played the first and the same 11 two or three times in a row, to be fair. So he's doing well. And I'm sure he's someone who listens to his gut. And he goes with a gut feeling. He did it in the first game, did it in the second game, he's done it in the third game, and it's worked. So we believe in him.
It does speak to me that maybe the outside noise is something that is somewhat being paid attention to. Did the level of bristle sort of surprise you?
Not really. I think this often happens. It happens at every World Cup. There's outside noise, there's opinions, and, you know, Australian football's a close network, and it usually irks the people involved, but often in a positive manner because you've developed that siege mentality and, all right, us against them, not really us against them because we're part of the same country, but we're going to prove them wrong or use it as ammunition. You know, I think some of the criticism has been a little bit over the top. At the same time, it's great. It's what we want. We want to be talking about the 11. I mean, that's been one of the great joys of being at this World Cup is that that's been the discussion more than anything is who's going to be in the team for the next game. And every Aussie you bump into, that's all anyone wants to talk about. And how refreshing is that to discuss it at length rather than all the other nonsense in Australian football? So really enjoyed it. And to be honest, I think Tony Popovich deserves a lot of leeway in the sense that, you know, he is watching along with his coaching staff, this team, at close quarters, and they're aware of things like the conditioning and how the players are recovering. And, you know, players like Volpato and Iron Kunda, the fact that they can't get through, you know, a full 90 minutes. So they've got to be careful with how they manage them. And I think people probably failed to take some of that stuff into account a little bit. That doesn't mean that he doesn't get it wrong from time to time. It's all part of it. It's all part of the fun of the World Cup. And if you can use it as ammunition, then great. You know, some of the criticism's been okay. Some's been a bit, gone a bit too far. Ultimately, he's delivered. And the Turkey selections were a bombshell, but magnificent. Maybe he gets a, you know, one selection wrong against the USA at most, mixes it up again against Paraguay. You know, the team gets the result they need. So all in all, it's a huge tick for Tony Popovich and his coaching staff.
Egypt, Iran, Belgium, New Zealand, that is Group G. Whoever is second there is who we will play. On Saturday, Egypt play Iran, Belgium play New Zealand. Assuming Egypt beats Iran and Belgium beats New Zealand, a lot of assumptions, we would be playing Belgium in Dallas. Yeah. Because, like, while that is somewhat scary, because Belgium have a litany of stars, of world-class players, they have been bad in this tournament to this point. Is it a team to fear, Garby?
I don't think it's a team to fear. I really don't. Of course, they will be the favourites. Of course, it will be a very difficult challenge. But fear? No. Nah. Fear is France, it's Spain, it's Brazil, it's England. Belgium aren't performing at that standard at the moment. Talent-wise, are they that far off Turkey? I don't think so. Are they going to press Australia with the intensity that the USA did? No, not for me, not even close. I think Australia is well-conditioned to go into this game and, yet, perhaps have to relinquish possession and defend superbly and resolutely at times. But I think they can have their moments. I really do. And get something in the game. I think this is an opportunity for Australia to break through and finally win a knockout game at a World Cup. It would be if they can beat Belgium, if that ends up being the opponent. It'd be the biggest victory in Australian football history. It would have to be the case at a World Cup, most certainly. So, yeah, I think it's something to be excited about. I think there is genuine enthusiasm around that game. A big break as well, whoever it is. And that was the key to finishing second. Probably an extra 4 days break compared to if they'd finished third. So players like Iron Kunda and Mo Touré get extra rest. You know, is Jacob Italiano going to be okay? Harry Suter, who hasn't played a lot of club football, he gets to really rest up, the superstar defender. I think Australia's going to be in a really good position to trouble whoever they play. And if it's Belgium, I wouldn't be writing us off.
It's a feel-good story right now, Australian football. Garby, thanks for sharing it with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Saki. Cheers, mate.
We have recorded this episode before the crucial Group G clashes. To find out what happened there and exactly who the Socceroos play next, stay tuned to the ABC Sport website. They have rolling coverage. No one is faster to the punch. I'm Patrick Stack. This was ABC Sport Daily World Cup special produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to SBS, the Socceroos, FIFA and Football 360 for the extra audio used in this episode.